I just sat down and you'd gone straight into phoning. I was like, oh, panic.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You're Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garrick. Plain, simple, Garrick.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast. And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro.
Bloody hell. Oh, I love a woman in uniform.
Are we ready?
When you are.
Yes. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast. Today's episode is Season 3, Episode 17, Visionary. And I am with two visionary podcasters of my very own. I am, as always, joined by Dr. William T. Robinson.
T? T for testosterone?
Yes. And the mighty Paul T. Spataro.
I know what my T stands for. It's actually my name.
And I am Andrew T. Leyland. I don't know why we've all got middle initials of T. I suppose they should have been J, really, shouldn't they?
Well, my middle initial is T.
And not really.
So I just assume you guys are copying.
Is it?
Is it Tony?
No.
I don't remember.
Tiberius.
Tiberius. I wish it was Tiberius.
Paul Tiberius Spataro. I don't want to know what your middle name is. From now on, you are Paul Tiberius Spataro.
Right, I can live with that.
Fact, all right, well, that's the episode.
I may head
that
to the courts tomorrow to get it legally changed.
Paul Tiberius Spataro. That is such a great name.
It really is.
Isn't it? Ah, that would be fantastic.
So, anyway, does your middle initial T stand for the drink tea?
Yes, mine strengths for the Indie Tea Company. No, mine's Tay. You know, like Tay Leone. Mine's like that. It has the little accent over the A because I'm ever so slightly pretentious.
Yeah, but not as pretty.
No, that is very true. And I don't get sent to sex addiction clinics. Oh, was that Duchovny?
Yeah, I think that was Duchovny.
Was that Anthony? Right. That was Anthony Weiner too. Oh wait, never mind.
Well, with that surname, yeah.
I told you I used to. When I lived in Brooklyn, and I would go to the train station. Anthony Weiner used to be out campaigning at the train station all the time. This was 25 years ago, before he was even a senator. And I used to think then, what a douche. He came over to me a few times.
I thought
and
you
tried to
say
talk
he was.
To me, and I was like, yeah, I'm not interested.
He was out sexting at the train station.
I watched that. The documentary about him, and it is fascinating just to see how this guy thought he was above it all and you know, just caused his own downfall and still like lived in denial about it.
Not just a river in Egypt.
Yes, exactly.
Anyway, that's the episode that we're covering tonight. It's all about Anthony Weiner. So I hope you'll enjoy it. But before we do that, do we have any Star Trek news?
I recently acquired the original series, complete series Blu-ray.
Ooh.
And I love it. I've been watching a few episodes each on the Blu-ray. It's not really not bad. It was $55 for the complete series. And each episode, they have the original and the enhanced version.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask.
I already had the movie series on Blu-ray, so that really completes my Star Trek Blu-ray needs. I have the, I don't know what Asian country they're from. I assume China, but I'm not certain. The DVDs of the complete series of The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. So, I'm good. I don't really don't need to go out and buy any more Star Trek Blu-rays or DVDs.
No, that's quite a good deal, because the Blu-rays, the original show looks the best of all of them.
Well, because that's the only one that... I think they started enhancing Next Generation, but I don't think they've completed it yet.
Yeah, the Next Gen's all the Blu-ray releases are finished.
Okay, but, you know...
And they do look pretty good. They've redone some of the special effects for Next Generation as well, but not to the extent they did the original.
What I really like about the enhancements is they didn't George Lucas it. They didn't put in special effects that really outshine what you're watching and call attention to themselves. They just cleaned it up a little bit and added a couple of little things here and there, but they never lost control of themselves.
No, and something like the Doomsday Machine, which is a very heavy FX episode, they've done a really good job of updating that one. Such a good job of updating it so that the visuals are different than they were originally, but match the dialogue better, because the original, they were obviously using stock footage because they couldn't afford new model work. The Doomsday Machine, they've done a brilliant job. The only one I'd argue with is in A Mock Time, they've put that long shot in of the three of them walking across that massive bridge to the place where they have the battle to the death, and that's the only time I was watching the remastered ones and I felt that special effect didn't belong there, because it's a complete replacement of the original scene. It's not an enhancement. And it suddenly takes you out to have this CG, completely CG scene in the middle of the episode that wasn't there originally.
Okay, I have not seen that scene yet, but I would probably tend to agree with you from what you're saying.
But everything else, a really good job with them. I keep ganging on about Doomsday Machine, but that one's a brilliant job.
And when they first came out with the original series on DVDs, which was not cleaned up, it was just basically the prints, I think they were charging like $150 a season. So while $55 might sound like, you know, $55, I don't have $55 to spend. But when you think about it, you know, it's the complete series, it's three full seasons, and it is enhanced, and it has, you know, the extra features and stuff. To me, I look at that as being effectively a bargain.
And you get the cage with that as well, don't you? Isn't that on the season three set? Because they've done a good job of updating that one as well, because I love The Cage. I think The Cage is a brilliant episode.
Well, I remember back in the days, you know, in the 80s, when the only version of it you could get was...
Oh, the black and white colour.
Go back and forth from black and white.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Gene Roddenberry introducing it. I remember that. I had that on VHS. Yeah, blimey.
Actually, we do have a little bit of Star Trek news. We had received a
way to get it right now, Bill.
What?
Andy asked if we had Star Trek news about 20 minutes ago. Actually,
well, no. It jarred my head when you said that you were watching the DVDs, because Mr. Dowler sent us a link about Deep Space Nine. The complete series will be released in the Epic Pack, and I just checked on Amazon. The price is going for... Now I've lost the window.
Epic Pack. There's, isn't that what you get kids when you need them to throw up because they drink poison?
Yes, yes. No, no, it's not. I think you're thinking of an EpiPen. No, that's like when if they have like a bee sting. Oh, that's Ipecac.
Yeah, that's what you said. The Deep Space Nine Ipecac.
No, I said Epic Pack, not Ipecac.
Just the fact that I can get you doing that makes me happy.
I said it without messing it up, though.
Go ahead, say it again.
I'm not going to.
Dance, monkey, dance.
See, that sounds familiar. Wasn't that something I said to you last night on Battlefield?
Yeah.
Shoot at your feet.
And then I went around the back and shot you in the back of the head.
Like, dance, Layla, dance. Ha ha ha. Blam. Hey!
See, the thing with that is Bill was trying to be really nice and explain to me all the new character moves in the new Rogue One pack, and I just walked around the back of the ship and shot him in the back of the head. Bam!
Like, hey, Andy, so what happens in this game? Hey, you shot me!
Well, that's what I'm supposed to do. I'm like, well,
It's sometimes I'm sad that I'm sorry, not a gamer, because I would love to get involved with this with you guys.
Oh, Bill always gets his own back. He just gives the controller to Ben.
What do you play?
Oh,
on
I
platform?
I
PS4.
Yeah, I can't. I have, you know, in the house, Matthew has the Xbox, so that would be the only avenue I would have to even try.
Anyway, was this news of interest, Bill, or have you just completely forgotten about it?
No. Blaine had sent us a notice that Deep Space Nine, the complete series, the Epic Pack, is going to be released on Amazon. It's going to be released on February of next year. So by the time this gets out, we may be actually close to that date. And right now on Amazon Prime, the price is $95 for the complete series. Its retail price is like $144. So you go on Amazon, you can save about $50 almost.
And do that through the Two True Freaks link.
Ka-ching. Yep. I'm not sure what how many, you know, what the all the special bonuses are or anything like that, but I'm sure everybody can just look that up.
And the only other vaguely relatable news is the new show's been pushed back to May, or have we already mentioned that?
Oh no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it's not airing in January anymore, it's been pushed back a couple of months.
Wonder if they'll change their mind about the whole online only.
Yeah, well, there's plenty of other avenues for to sell it to. Netflix, Netflix has got the worldwide distribution, so I would imagine it will show up on Netflix US eventually.
Eventually, yeah.
Well, thanks for coming up with that news, Bill.
Well, thanks for coming up with that news, Bill. Anyway, all right, okay.
Do your synopsis, monkey.
All right, I'll do my... Okay,
Andy, monkey. Andy, do the synopsis, monkey.
What? Where are we going? Planet 10. When are we going?
Real soon.
Well, we've finished with the Bible, and we've not started reading A Stitch in Time, the DS9 novel by Andy Robinson yet, that Dave Walker sent us a copy of. So we're just going straight into the synopsis for Visionary, which was the teleplay was by John Shirley, the story was by Ethan H. Cork, and it was directed by Riza Badie. It was episode 17 of season 3 and originally aired, roughly, because it was in syndication, on February 27th, 1995.
A glimpse into the future.
A few hours, I'm going to be dead.
Reveals a terrible fate.
Chief, do you have any idea of how far into the future you travel?
The worst disaster imaginable.
My God.
Make preparations to evacuate the station.
Is just hours away.
DS9 will be destroyed.
Only one man can stop it. Behold the beginning of the end. Next time on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Poisoned by radiation, Chief O'Brien experiences... Go on.
I have to correct you there. You didn't say that properly.
All right. Would you want me to say it again and you just jump in?
Yes. Let's try that again there.
All right. The synopsis is as follows. Poisoned by radiation...
You still didn't say that correctly.
Okay. Well, go on, then.
It's radiation.
It's radiation. Chief O'Brien experiences several time shifts, each 5 hours into the future, witnessing a bar brawl, his own death twice, and the destruction of the station. He deliberately subjects himself to more
radiation
in order to time shift 3 hours into the future to see us. To see exactly what causes the destruction. However, the
radiation
is too much, and O'Brien of the past dies, whilst the O'Brien of the future goes back in time to tell Commander Sisko that there is a cloaked Romulan Dededex-class warbird circling the station, plotting to destroy DS9 and collapse the wormhole, cutting off further contact with the Gamma Quadrant. At the end of the episode, O'Brien uses his little knowledge of the future to torment the profit-hungry Quark. And that is the end of the synopsis on Wikipedia.
Is this a South Park episode? They killed O'Brien!
Those bastards. I really enjoyed this one. I'm going to just flat out come and say I did not remember this at all when we have our little chat at the end of the recording of the previous episode. Oh, well, next we've got this one and this one. What, do you remember that one? I didn't remember this one at all. And as such, I thought it was a really engaging and entertaining time travel episode. They stayed, thankfully, very far away from let's reroute the matter-antimatter interflux chamber through the plasma conduits to cause a warp core breach drivel that I hate on Voyager. The techno babble was kept to a minimum. The character work was exceptionally well done. Quark was brilliant. And Colmeany kept the attention of the audience throughout the entire episode, proving that he could do it when he's got the material. And the special effects were very well done on the double scenes. But I really enjoyed this one. I thought it was a top quality little science fiction adventure that Deep Space Nine doesn't really do a lot. This felt like it could have been an episode of Next Gen more than Deep Space Nine, but it worked very well for what it was. I loved it. I really enjoyed this one.
You think this could have been a reworked Next Gen script?
In the companion, they say that it wasn't, but it sat on the shelf for a bit because Ira Stephen Burr felt that it felt like a Deep Space Nine idea, and he wasn't happy they'd made it Next Gen, and he wasn't happy that they'd made it Deep Space Nine enough, and that's why there's quite a few, although only the teleplay and the story writer are credited on screen. Ira Burr did a rewrite of it, and Andrea Bermanis worked out the science of it, and Ron Moore took a crack at some of it as well, so the entire team worked on it to make it more DS9 specific.
It does have a little bit of this feel conceptually of, you know, we keep going back and the Enterprise blows up at the end of every scene. But story-wise, it, you know, like I said, concept maybe, but story-wise it felt fully Deep Space Nine integrated to me. It didn't feel like one where you just take other characters and plug them into the roles and you wouldn't realize it was a DS9. I mean, it felt like the characters were being true to the way they're supposed to be. So I have no issue with that at all. And, time travel, time conflict episodes are just another thing on the long list that I'm an easy mark for.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was very engaged by this episode. I watched it, and I also did not remember... I didn't remember the episode, so I had no clue where it was going. The ultimate reveal of the ship that was causing the time thing really threw me off. Yeah. I never expected that.
But as soon as they said, well, this could only be caused by a quantum singularity, I'm like, there's a Romulan ship out there.
Because you are more familiar with quantum singularities than I am.
Where are you? Like, you guys are just like, hello, you have Romulans on the station, and this could be caused by a singularity, but we don't seem to have any out there. It's a cloaked ship!
For somebody who is as... who loves DS9 as I do, and has seen the whole series, I am conveniently forgetting the Romulans and their motivations, and it actually threw me off a little bit to think, they wanted to destroy the wormhole and the ship and the station. Like that.
Yeah, but
that I didn't expect that explanation, and when they said it, you know, it just, oh yeah, that's great, you know.
Yep. Hey, Andy, could you pronounce the name of that Romulan warbird again?
I can have a go. I don't think I got it right the first time that I did it. The Romulan Dederidex class warbird.
Just say the word Dederidex.
Dederidex.
Do 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 do.
Dederidex.
Do 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 do.
I can't believe I let you walk me into that. Dederidex.
Do 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 do.
Oh, damn it. The Romulans were really good in this one.
Yeah, the main Romulan was the guy who... I believe he was the guy who hired George Costanza on Seinfeld to work for him to work on the Penske file. And then George didn't do anything and he had to fire him.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You haven't done anything on this file at all. But yeah, I thought their motivations were well hidden. I thought the way that they were so just condescending to the humans was well done. You know, they're really, you know, bringing the Romulans back into the picture here, because we didn't get, you know, we got some of them in TNG, but I don't think they really ever made them a true adversary. You know, they were too busy with the Borg and the Klingon Civil War and that kind of thing.
Yeah, the closest they got over there was Tomalak.
Yeah, I mean, they showed them to be conniving a bit. And, you know, in the background, then you had the, what's her name, Tasha Yar's daughter thing. But on a whole, I didn't think the Romulans were well developed as a villain during that series. And in DS9, I mean, they never become a primary antagonist to our heroes. But they are always on the periphery, and they always seem to pose a threat. And I like the way they're portrayed.
I liked the callback that the Romulans have given them a cloaking device to help with the Dominion, so they're obviously going to want to know what's going on. And it's another one of those that we've talked about before, that Deep Space Nine stayed in the same place. So the idea that the Romulans will come back at some point and say, look, we did you guys a favor. Now it's your turn to pay us back. But their actual plot to close the wormhole by blowing up Deep Space Nine, I thought was brilliantly Romulan.
Yeah, my familiarity with the Romulans in this series, or my recollection of them, really doesn't take any form until we get to the fake.
Well, the other thing that was that the Romulans bring up, which is they also touch on a recurring subplot in the show, is they're asking Kira and Odo, you know, well, why did Odo, why were you the only one that rescued Kira? And she's like, well, why do you think he rescued you? And she's like, well, we were just trapped down below. You know, that she's in denial that, you know, they're hinting that Odo is feeling something for her, and that, you know, that they just kind of bring that little strike a key on that, and just to keep it in the show, to keep it active. Mm. And then she's all, you know,
I loved Kira in this bit. I love that Kira is the one who's saying that everything should be diplomatic and
then
she immediately turns around and yells at them and hits the table and storms out in a big huff. I thought that was so brilliantly Kira.
So as I was watching this, though, I had this thought process, but it was totally wrong. But I'm going to go into it anyway. Because I started thinking, oh, how convenient that O'Brien had this, you know, just happened to have these problems, and that revealed the Romulan ship, because otherwise they would have gotten away with it. If not for you meddling kids. But
not if you meddling Robinsons.
But then the flaw in my logic was that the reason he had the problems was because the ship was there. So it kind of, you know, there's a cause and effect thing going on there. If the ship had never come, he wouldn't have done the time travel, and it wouldn't. But if the ship hadn't come, he wouldn't have needed to have the time travel.
Isn't time travel just a little bit confusing on the whole?
They did seem to figure it all out as far as the time travel. Not so much what the cause of the time travel, but they kind of figured out the time travel very quickly. And I think that's almost a byproduct of they needed to in the episode, because you had a lot packed in here and you couldn't do it in 45 minutes if you spent too much time trying to figure out what's going on with the time travel. But they immediately came to the conclusion that he was jumping ahead 5 hours and played that to their advantage.
Yeah, because it was like the frequency that the singularity was resonating at was causing, and that's how they figured out, well, we could adjust this and you could jump 2 hours ahead instead.
I like the nonchalant way other O'Brien always reacted when our Chief O'Brien came through. It's just like, oh, you're here, good, you need to go back and tell everyone this.
Yes, I'm going to die.
But that was, yeah, well, that was the part that I didn't really get. If Miles in the past comes forward and dies, shouldn't Miles in the future stop existing?
Yeah, because the Miles in the future wouldn't exist for him to go back in time.
But then there's always that question that when you time travel, you don't actually go into your future. You go into an alternate reality. So he may have pulled an alternate. God, I'm sounding like Blaine.
So what you did was you died and you took this alternate reality Miles into your universe, and you left that universe.
Who was
with
going
no Miles.
To die? Because that Miles was going to die anyway. You follow me? That Miles was going to die regardless.
Yeah.
So he pulled him out, and although I guess you could argue, how do we know that the Miles in that universe was going to die? Like, multiverse.
I enjoy the multiverse stuff. I don't want to make it sound like I have a problem with that. I enjoy it in the comics. I enjoy it in movies. But I almost feel like it should have been a Back to the Future thing. As the present-day O'Brien started to die, the future O'Brien should have, like, been fading from existence. It's still one reality. But, you know, I definitely get the alternate realities thing. You know, that was the whole basis of What If.
I remember watching it and thinking about that, and then I thought, it doesn't really matter. to the enjoyment of the story, it wasn't something, you know, if you're sat at the end of it thinking, well, that doesn't work, it can sometimes adversely affect your opinion on the episode or the story or whatever. With this one, I just kind of bought into it, because the whole jumping 5 hours in time and then communicating with himself, and they kind of broke all the laws of Star Trek time travel anyway, by every time O'Brien came back, he changed the future. And everybody else, though, was like, yeah, okay, we'll do that. We'll change the future. And there was no, you know, there was no arguing about it like they would do in the original series or in The Next Generation. So I just kind of went with it that this was one of those episodes where they just weren't going to obey the Section 31 laws of time travel. Can you imagine if Section 31 had got wind of this?
Yeah.
And sent some guys over to investigate what was going on.
No, we'll get there.
Well, you got Section 31, and then you have the temporal agency. So I think it's actually the temporal agency.
Yeah, it's
guys.
The temporal guys that I'm thinking of. But yeah. Maybe Sisko just didn't mention this in his logs.
And you both have seen Season 2 of Flash, correct? So, yeah. I mean, we're far enough removed from that I don't think anybody's going to be upset by spoilers. But spoilers. When the evil Jay Garrick, the fake Jay Garrick, comes back in time, and then he ends up getting killed, but then his true self goes on to be villainous and blah, blah, blah. And they say, oh, he's just a time remnant. That always leaves me a little confused, and that's what this whole thing with Miles feels like to me. That the Miles who went forward in time and then died became some sort of time remnant. But I never understood how you could do that, how you could kill your past self and still exist kind of thing. Like, that was just like, I just have to accept this on faith that there's some sort of scientific principle here. Blaine, maybe you have some sort of explanation.
My theory with it is that the Miles O'Brien that went forward in time was dying of the radiation poisoning. The Miles O'Brien that he sent time.
Radiation.
Thank you very much. The Miles O'Brien that he sent back in time never had that radiation poisoning, so that Miles O'Brien would never die.
It's the existence of the two Miles O'Brien's that gives me the conundrum.
That causes the headache.
The other future one didn't die because he was in an alternate reality.
And that's the thing, is my mind is trying to fight against the alternate reality theory and come up with something else. And the alternate reality theory, I can accept.
Well, the other thing is now he has, like, an extra whatever that jump was, although he was mostly asleep, it looks like. Okay. I'm glad I remembered that. That bugged me. Okay. And this kind of backs up your theory, Paul. Wouldn't the future O'Brien? Why would the future O'Brien be asleep if the past O'Brien? See, that actually maybe that backs up my theory that he was in an alternate reality, because why would future O'Brien be asleep if they knew this was going to happen?
Why would
right?
future O'Brien you not follow have me? Radiation in his body.
Well, why wouldn't he be sitting there waiting? Like, okay, they're going to come through now, you know, because he should know. So I think that further cements the idea that he was in an alternate reality. Then the question begs is, if was he in an alternate reality where the station wasn't going
then
to blow
he wasn't
up,
die
and then
Keiko
comes
O'Brien.
Back and goes, where's my husband? So I guess we've just talked ourselves into a circle.
Yeah, because if he didn't have the radiation, then that means there wasn't a Romulan ship circling their Enterprise, which means he didn't need to go back in time, and he could have just gone on living his happy alternate reality life, la 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 la.
As Sarah Connor once said, a person could go nuts thinking about this
and
stuff.
And this is why I am an easy mark for time travel stories, though, because I love the problems that it creates.
Hmm.
It makes my mind work. It makes my brain hurt, I have to admit. But it makes my mind work when, you know, otherwise I could just sit and have dumb, quiet entertainment. I'd rather have my brain working once in a while. It's a very
especially
rarely used
early
organ.
In the morning. Braid, what is braid?
Quark has a really good scene in the middle of the episode where he asks Chief O'Brien if he's coming jumping around in the future, can he give him some results on Darbo games or whatever, and you get that really good bit at the end where O'Brien kind of discusses the stuff that we're talking about. I'm not the O'Brien from this universe, and Dr. Bashir says, well, you are, you've just got a few different memories, but you're the same guy essentially. And as he walks out the bar, he says, Quark, Darbo. I really like that ending.
And I like the fact that we had several more dun, 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 shots, dun, 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 dun. Including Quark throwing darts into him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, where O'Brien's trying to teach Quark how to
I
play
darts. I love that,
darts.
When he throws all three darts at the same time and he just kind of like chucks them.
And Morn's sitting there, oh, what?
And it's because we've not seen Morn for quite a bit.
Yeah, I don't know why not. Well, Morn is so great for, you know, quick comic relief in episodes. I think they underused him.
Well, didn't he wasn't he in one of the other ones when people were evacuating the station? Wasn't he one of the people that was on the like they showed him during the evacuation, or am I just was I watching an alternate reality version of the show?
No, we have seen him recently in one of those evacuating the station things.
Oh, okay.
But the thing is, as Paul's mentioned a couple of times, we've had a couple of scenes and a couple of episodes here where the stories have been quite similar. So I'm losing track of our Morn sightings. Unfortunately.
Sorry, I just saw the picture you put up for this episode.
Yeah, pretty good. Hey, that's all you, that's no doing me.
I'll have to get a hold of that. By the way, I
you know what
have,
we've not mentioned?
I think the last two episodes I don't have artwork for.
Right. Do you know what we've not mentioned? Deep Space Nine blows up in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
But Billsy, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot that was vaguely
that happened,
important.
Yeah. That was a thing, yeah.
Okay. Apparently they spent an awful lot of time and money blowing the station up for that scene for the editors to only use a bit of it.
Don't we see that again? Don't they reuse that scene?
I think we do see Deep Space Nine blow up again at some point. I can't remember.
Yeah,
because
I look kind of familiar. Like, I think I've seen this before.
We have all been here.
Well, it was apparently quite an expensive effect, so.
It's like deja vu in a time travel episode. Ah! My head
hurts.
But it hurts in a good way. Like I said, I like the fact that the time travel episodes make me sit and start contemplating how does this work? How does this go together? You know, for better or for worse, my brain is always trying to seek organization, and time travel makes that a challenge.
Yes. But I don't know. I thought this was a really, really entertaining episode. I really did. I think maybe because I went into it not expecting anything, because I didn't remember anything at all.
Yeah, this was one also that I didn't. Even as I started to watch it, I still didn't. Like, I really don't remember how this is going to end.
I figured it would end with them all dying.
Yeah.
Just assumed.
And then we'd watch the rest of the show in an alternate universe, where Bashir is an augmented human.
Spoilers.
And Garrick is not a tailor.
Plain, simple Garrick.
He sadly wasn't in this episode.
What?
Which is a shame.
Oh, I'm sure he was. We just didn't see him.
Ah, right.
And I guess they still have a need to limit his part somewhat, because, you know, if it's not about him, they don't want to pay his salary, I think.
That's fair enough. Because the minute Andy Robinson comes in, he makes it all about him anyway, because he's just that good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anyway, is that it? Have we nothing else on this one?
I don't know.
It's the introduction of the dartboard.
Oh, yeah, it says yes.
That will end up being a major part of Deep Space Nine as we go forward.
Do they have dartboards that light up like that?
No, that's added on. That's a special effect.
I was like, boy, that would be nice.
That would actually be really cool, yeah.
No, that one's on 17. No, that one's on 20. No, that one, no. Oh, it's on 20.
They do have electronic dartboards, though. I had one at one time. They're not as enjoyable as a corkboard. They're just not.
Right. Well, oh, yeah, that's right, because you have to have the plastic tips, because it's basically got a bunch of little holes in it.
The darts feel very, very different.
So you have to hit that hole, which is kind of sucks, because you might hit in between those holes. I mean, it's kind of designed to slide into it, but I've had plenty of times on a plastic dartboard that it's bounced off. So I guess I answered my own question. See, I didn't even remember that we do have those.
No, I didn't either. Maybe we don't.
I did have one at one time. I preferred to go back to the traditional board. It was less the board itself than the darts. I didn't really care for the electronic darts. They didn't feel right. They didn't feel weighted the same way.
No.
So.
And the tips aren't metal. They're dangerous. Plastic. Safe.
Safe crap.
You know what I miss? Lawn darts. Did you have those in England, Andy?
Yeah.
Oh, they were great. I used to take them things and just whip them as high as I could, straight up in the air, and then run. Nothing like a 2-foot dart coming straight down. Where it's going to land, nobody knows.
Submit, you get out of the way.
No, I never speared a cat. Although, not too sure about Paul, the great cat dart hunter.
I've never been a lawn darts guy. I'm an Italian guy from Brooklyn. Bocce's my game.
Really? We couldn't call you a dart tannin?
I've always enjoyed playing darts in a pub. But lawn darts kind of escaped me.
Just don't play cork style. That's what we should have darts cork style. Just take them all and throw them.
From a production point of view, it's much cheaper to have them play darts than it is to go and play that racquetball funny game.
Yeah, or what's the other one that Riker and his dad played?
Was that Peritzi Squares?
No, with the tight, form-fitting outfits.
The ultimate, what is it? The ultimate expression of the martial arts.
Yeah, you got a stick.
What if he had a pointed stick?
You got a stick, and you're padded up like a hockey goalie. How is that? Whatever.
I wish I had a stick like that.
You cheated! Blah 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 is illegal! How do you think I beat you all those years? Why do I know the whole dialogue from the scene? That's my
That's quite scary, because that's not one of the better episodes, Bill.
I don't know. Sorry.
Was that one on a lot when you were in the Navy and you just let it on? It playing in the background.
Maybe I have father issues of my own I'm trying to resolve, you know.
By playing with your dad in
full. You always cheated at lawn darts.
That's how I kept you coming back. You killed a cat. That's illegal in lawn darts.
Anyway, should we rate this one?
Oh, well, I was wondering, with all this time travel discussion,
okay,
what would Blaine say?
Ah, that's a very good question.
Well, Blaine would say, "Hi guys, O'Brien is now a visionary. Either he's gained magical powers of mind, strength, skill, and speed he can use to combat the evil Darkling Lords, or he's jumping forward in time, which obviously means the station will explode unless he does something specific, because he's seeing glimpses of the near future in Star Trek, and that always means the ship or station you are on is going to explode unless you do something specific. This was enjoyable enough, if memory serves. I've got to start writing these emails more promptly. I've watched about 30 episodes beyond this one at the moment. I like the legitimate mystery and the implications about Bashir's fantasy life when he criticizes O'Brien's. I do also enjoy it when O'Brien gets a plot line of his own that doesn't depend upon marital tension. Not because those aren't well written, but just because that seems to be the default personal O'Brien story. The I hate temporal mechanics line is enjoyable too. Blaine."
Yes, that is. That did make me laugh, that. I'd forgotten about that line.
Hmm. Yeah, I was actually hoping, because I don't read these in advance, because I don't want to let Blaine's opinion influence mine before we read it. But I was hoping Blaine might give us a little bit more of the science behind the alternate O'Brien in here. I guess that's
science. Maybe he couldn't, because there is none. Maybe it's just entirely made up for this episode.
Maybe he's an alternate reality Blaine.
He could be, yeah.
Who's actually an English teacher.
Hello?
You know, Mary Poppins was on last night on ABC, I just want to say. And first thing I thought was, as soon I tuned in and it was Dick Van Dyke and he was singing to the cows and the sheep, and then he said, "Oh," and even the little sheep had the Cockney accent. I'm like, "Oh my God, Andy would hate this." And I changed the channel. I'm like, "I can't watch this."
Should we cast Dick Van Dyke as Dengar?
Oi! Oi, Princess Leia! Cool, blimey, Princess Leia!
Sorry about that. An alarm went off on my phone that I've never heard before, and I couldn't figure out where the sound was coming from.
Oh, no worries.
I was like, what the hell anyway, is that music?
I think it was telling you there was a temporal anomaly close by. Either that or a lawn dart was coming at you.
From up above.
Oh! Bill! Kurt Hugh Robinson!
Sorry.
Sorry, Paul.
Come to your house.
Paul sat there like mourn with darts all over him.
Oh, dear. You know what this means, Paul? If we can get another group up together this year, we need to all play lawn darts at your house.
If somebody wants to bring lawn darts, they're welcome to. I will not be going out and purchasing.
Somebody can buy lawn darts. They're probably illegal in 48 out of 50 states.
They do seem to have a certain deadly potential to them.
But don't all games?
No. No, not at all. I've played Monopoly and I never felt my life threatened.
Paper cuts?
I don't know, man. If somebody robs my bank, I'm beating them to death with a bloody stick.
I did actually slice my leg open really nasty playing horseshoes one time. Because, you know, they take, you know, the pole that you're throwing the horseshoe at, they take that, and repeatedly, every time you go to play, they pound it into the ground.
Pound it into the ground so it flattens out the top and becomes like a blade.
It really becomes incredibly sharp. And I brushed up against it one time, not even knowing it, and somebody says, you know, you got a huge gash in your leg.
Yeah, you probably didn't even feel it.
It was so sharp, didn't feel it until somebody told me. They saw the blood rushing out of my shin. I had no idea.
Oh, ah.
So, yes, games can go deadly quickly, I guess.
When games go bad.
The life-threatening game of horseshoes without even anybody throwing a horseshoe.
Yeah.
You know, you tell somebody you get injured playing horseshoes, they assume somebody threw the horseshoe and it hit you.
Or somebody tried to grab your foot and hammer it onto the horseshoe under the bottom of your foot.
We've all lived through that, though. That's not deadly.
I'm not a horse! So, ratings.
Ratings!
ratings.
I just opened my mouth to say something. I couldn't remember what I was going to say. But yes, it was ratings. So I'll go first because I synopsis this very intricate episode thanks to Wikipedia. I'm giving this 4.5. Really enjoyed it. Bottom line, thoroughly enjoyable episode.
I'm not quite as high on it, and I don't disagree with you at all about the fact that it's a very enjoyable episode. It's just a matter of where we put the number on it. And while I found it really entertaining, I don't know, the fact that I had forgotten it completely, I think speaks to its overall intensity or whatever, that it became a forgettable episode to me somehow, even though I really enjoyed it. So maybe it's unfair, but I'm going to just keep it at a 4.
Okay.
I think I'm going to go with a 4 as well. And actually kind of for the same reasons as Paul, that it was a good episode, but I had no memory of it. It just wasn't there until I started to watch it. Even then, I was, you know, where I was saying to the screen going, there's a Romulan ship out there. You've got them on a station. This has to be how this ends. You know, it's obvious. Why are you not picking this up? Oh, look, they finally figured it out. There's a Romulan out there. Okay. So, yeah, I'm going to give it 4 future O'Briens. Or is that 3 future O'Briens and 1 slightly dead past O'Brien?
A dead past O'Brien.
Yeah.
Okay, we have one piece of email in our in-basket from David Lessenberry.
Cool.
Dear Wardens of the Orb, I just wanted to...
I like that title. I like that title.
Yes, I'm very willing to be a Warden of the Orb. Of the Orbs. I just wanted to drop you a line to thank you for this excellent show. I was a big fan of Keep 'Em Flying as well. I was a big fan of Keep 'Em Flying, as well as a regular listener of both the Fantasticast and Back to the Bins. You can't question David for his impeccable taste here. At any rate, the three of you have mentioned at several points that you highly doubt that anyone unfamiliar with DS9 is listening to the podcast. I am, in fact, that guy. I started watching the DVDs in order to follow along with the podcast, and I just finished the 2-parter past tense last night. In other words, thank you for turning me on to the only Star Trek program that I had never watched. I'm not sure why, as I am definitely a Trekkie at heart. I suppose it was more of an accident of age and timing. Star Trek The Next Generation ended a few days after I graduated from college. I don't think I even owned a television when DS9 was on in first-run syndication. Thanks for all the hours of enjoyment, David Lessenberry. You know, whenever I come across somebody who has never seen a show that I really loved, and they're binging it, I'm very jealous.
I felt that way with you and Firefly, that you were getting to watch this for the first time. So there was a certain vicarious enjoyment of you getting to watch it for the first time with us. That was really fun. So the fact that somebody's doing it along with us at home is great, isn't it?
Yeah,
I love that.
Absolutely.
Thank you, David.
I'm jealous of him getting to watch this for the first time, and I feel a tremendous sense of gratification that we've gotten somebody to watch something that they are enjoying based upon our talking about it.
I am just going to say, David, I really think you should also listen to Hey Kids Comics. I'm just saying.
Or Is It Yours?
Or Is It Yours? Yeah, Is It Yours has a couple of really excellent guest stars on it as well.
2 of them might be on this show. Is It Yours?
I've never been on Hey Kids.
That I'm looking.
No one's ever been on Hey Kids Comics.
I don't even think
it's alternate reality, Andy.
Oh, Jaws 2 was on the other night. I actually sat and watched it, most of it. I think I fell asleep. It's really not as bad as you remember, is it, Jaws 2? It's quite an entertaining film in and of itself if you don't compare it to Jaws.
That's ultimately the take we had on the Jaws episode of Is It Jaws?
If you believe a shark can take down a helicopter. Yeah,
that's one of the more...
I totally believe that.
It's definitely one of the more
you
silly
scenes. You mean sharks can't do that? Yeah, but you say silly scenes like it's a bad thing.
It depends on the movie. Certain movies, a silly scene is more than welcome, and other movies, not so much. If you take this
at
with
midnight,
the perspective
just,
of wanting silly scenes, it's fine.
Yeah, and after midnight, when I was just dozing off before having to get up to work the next morning, I was perfectly in the mood for a shark attacking a helicopter.
But next to the original Jaws.
I mean, let's be honest.
I mean...
Yeah, or next to the original, it doesn't compare at all. But we do now live in a post-Sharknado world, so...
That's true. Yeah. I guess if sharks can be in tornadoes, they could take down a helicopter.
Couldn't take down Airwolf, though.
Ability to discuss anything meaningful. What are we going to be doing next time?
You mean Jaws 2 isn't meaningful?
No, I just think time travel is beating us down.
Yeah. Next time, our all new episode of Listen to the Prophets. Dr. Bashir is hearing distant voices.
Voices. I hear voices.
And we close the episode with a song. Say goodnight,
like
Gracie.
Mm.
See you later.
Gracie.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
So I was just like, I just spin and just then just rebooted it and took a dump. Because I was so pensive and tied up at that point, I was just like, I gotta go to the bathroom now.
Are you at all familiar with the concept of too much information?
No, why do you ask?
No reason.